The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
January, of course, is always the busiest month of the year for car sales. But what are they looking like this year? Motoring journalist Geraldine Herbert, motoring journalist with the Sunday Independent, is on the line. Geraldine, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Hello, Geraldine. You're there. Now, first of all, you can give us an update on the current situation with NCTs and driving tests, because one of our researchers was telling me got the NCT much delayed a few months ago and then was told they have to have another one just a few months later, even though it's not yet a year, not even half a year since the last NCT. That's kind of mad.
Yeah, that seems all very strange, Pat. I mean, as it stands, there's still a four-month extension for NCTs. So, for example, if your NCT originally expired in December 2020, it is not due until April 2021. Now, the best advice there is really just to go onto the NCTS site and put in your reg, and it should tell you when it's due again. But, I mean, it should, nothing really has changed in terms of that. The extension came in during the very first lockdown. It's still in existence, and the same format is running. NCTs are running normally, as in as much as they can. So, yeah, that just seems like a very odd one, Pat, to be honest.
Now, what about driving tests and how they are being organised? Because there's supposed to be a huge backlog, understandably.
Yeah, there is a very bad backlog at the moment, Pat. I mean, essentially what happened was the driving test was completely suspended for 4 months. And at the beginning of that, there were about 32,000 people who were eligible to do a test. Now that, because when they did resume, they were only running at a reduced capacity, that backlog has grown to about 64,000. Those were the figures for December. Now, the RSA desperately need to recruit more testers and to make a provision for overtime in order to actually just, you know, tackle this backlog. If they don't, they're saying that backlog could grow to 114,000 by the end of the year, which would be, you know, staggering. As it stands, is about a 25 to 30 week wait for a test. You can only do a test if you're an essential worker as defined by the government. The RSA are asking if you have a test scheduled and you're not an essential worker to cancel it. There is a provision if you urgently need one and are an essential worker, they can make some provisions for you. But that's kind of the waiting list at the moment, is, you know, 25 to 30 weeks. So it's pretty bad, Pat, and doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon.
OK, so if you desperately need a licence for work or whatever, an essential worker, you might be able to fast track it. But otherwise, there's a long wait for the normal cohort of 17-year-olds who want to get the licence and want to get wheels. They'll be waiting. That's the message. Now, let's talk about the changes in VRT, because the budget announced various changes. Can't say I understood them totally at the time. What do they now reveal?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what the government here are trying to do, Pat, is they're trying to move people towards plug-in hybrids and electric cars. So they changed the vehicle tax, the vehicle registration tax bans. So there's a new 7% ban now for low-emitting vehicles. And these are vehicles that emit up to 50 grams per kilometre. So what you're looking at are the plug-in hybrids and the electric cars. So essentially what happens is the price of those should come down, whereas the more the larger petrol and diesel car prices should go up. And it really is to just move people towards the more environmental choices. We really won't know for a couple of months really what impact this is having. But these changes did come in on January the 1st.
Now, talk to me about what happens with imports, because you have a situation where with VAT, suppose a car is made in Germany, then is imported into the UK, is driven in the UK for a couple of years, then as a second hand, it's imported into Ireland. What's the new regime?
Yeah, this is all very messy at the moment, Pat. OK, the original advice was if you were importing a car from the UK, now this is the UK and not Northern Ireland, you would pay an additional 21% VAT. So that was VAT on the car, and then you'd come back and do the usual VRT. Now, since Friday, Revenue have advised that depending on the rules of origin, now I'll explain that in a few minutes, you may be subject to customs duty of 10% also on importing a car. Now, essentially what rules of origin means is they determine whether a product assembled in a country should be counted as a product from that country or an import. And it comes down to the component parts, Pat. There's normally specified in a trade agreement, say 55% of the parts have to be local or whatever for it to be considered a UK car. Now, what revenue are saying is if the car, if the import is considered a UK origin, you don't have to pay customs duty. But if it's considered an EU, as in it came from France or Germany or whatever, you will have to pay it. Or if it's outside of the EU, as in a Japanese car, you will have to pay it. Now, it's very unclear from revenue at the moment.
I'm not clear. We are in the EU. How can we be paying a 10% customs duty on a car that comes from the EU? That's barking.
Yes, I know. Yeah, but this is, as I said, this is the advice.
Can't even be legal. You know, there can be no imposition of a customs duty on a car that they deem to be an EU car. There can't be. Cannot be.
Well, as I said, Revenue put this up on Friday.
Yeah.
And as it stands, that's it. Now, it all comes down to how you determine the rules of origin. As I said, how you determine a UK car, what percentage you're looking at. At the moment as well, SIMI are saying that the onus will be on the exporter to actually determine that. That, again, sounds like a total mess as to how this will happen. So if you go to the UK and you get a car, you buy a car, the person you're buying from, the dealer, will have to provide you with some proof. Again, as I said, this sounds crazy, but this is what it sounds at the moment. I've no doubt it'll be clarified in the next few days.
I hope so. And now, electric cars, the great future. We're supposed to have a million of these on the road by 2030. Is electrification moving apace?
Yeah, look, Pat, I mean, the numbers always sound small when it comes to electric cars, but I suppose there's a few things you need to consider. First of all, they were up 16%, the sales were last year, in a year where car sales generally were down 25%. The other thing as well is in 2020, I mean, diesel has gone down to 43% of the market share, and the combined market share of electric cars, plug-in hybrids and hybrids is now just under 20%. Now, if you consider in 2016, diesel made up 70% of the market share, and the combined total of, again, electric, plug-in hybrids and hybrids was less than 2%. When you start to look at that shift in 4 years, you begin to see, you know, the numbers for electric cars might be small, but the combined market share is certainly moving at a pace.
Okay. I suppose the plug-in hybrids and the hybrids and electrical vehicles, bunching them all together is a bit misleading, because obviously if you've got a plug-in hybrid, you have no range anxiety at all. You can carry on and fill up at your local filling station, and the same with an absolute hybrid. Whereas the EV, you're limited by what the battery can give you, and then where can I find a charge point? So they should separate them out into very distinct categories, I would have thought.
No, absolutely. But the reason for combining them just for this is the fact that still one in five new car buyers are going into a dealership and not opting for your regular petrol and diesel. So I suppose that's it is showing a change of mindset more than anything.
Now, how is lockdown going to affect car sales? Now, most people who are going to buy a new car in the early months of 2021 will have ordered it probably back in November anyway for delivery in the new year. But you'd suspect if people can't go to kick the tires in the showrooms, that sales might be affected.
Yeah, this is really bad news for car dealers. If you consider, Pat, last year, 88,000 cars were sold. That was for the entire of 2020. 30,000 were sold in January. That'll just, show you just how important this month is and the next few months for car dealers. Now, as it stands, as you said, a lot of people will have ordered cars in advance. They can actually collect their cars. They can sort of do click and collect, but they have probably test driven the car in December anyway, or, a similar model or whatever. What car dealerships are doing now is they're trying to facilitate online sales in the best way they can. They are actually... The car loans can be approved by some car dealers on the phone. Cars are being delivered to customers directly if they place orders now. So, I mean, as I said, they are doing the best they can, but it's just a very, very difficult time for them.
Yeah. I mean, you can, if you're buying a new car, you have to spec it up. You can do it at home and then place your order. I'm just wondering, the whole business of haggling and trade-ins, there's some of those online sites that will offer you to buy your car, and the ad goes, you don't have to buy one of ours for us to buy yours. But if you access those, they want a picture of the front, the sides, the top, the bottom, and so on and so forth before they'll make you an offer. And I have no idea how good that offer would be compared to driving the car to the forecourt. Global trends, the business of maybe not owning a car, but sharing a car. Where's that?
Yeah, this was the big thing, Pat, you know, personal vehicle ownership versus shared mobility. And shared mobility was the big thing. And COVID has kind of turned that on its head, really. I mean, while people, there's been less of a need for a car with people working from home, but also the car has kind of assumed a new significance in the sense that it's your own private bubble. Also, who wants to share a car at the moment? So it'll be interesting to see what, I mean, the big thing is, Pat, like, what will be the long-term effects of COVID? Will it be a case like this, you know, the Spanish flu, where they all went, we all went pretty much back to normal, and the roaring 20s, you know, was followed it. And there's so, but whether or not, you know, sort of the decisions made now and the trends now will actually have a long-term impact. If they have, it could have a huge impact long-term on shared mobility. But at the moment, I mean, that, you know, we've certainly moving away from that. And that looks like it'll be here for a while anyway.
Now, the other trends, connectivity, we all know how connected the brand new vehicles tend to be, and that is only going to become more the trend in the future, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the big thing, telematics in cars, cars talking to each other, cars talking, you know, to smart cities connected to all sorts of outside devices. Of course, this is the kind of thing the government would be looking at in the future when they're trying to compensate for the decline in fuel tax. You know, if they're going to consider some sort of a road usage tax, you'd need those telematics devices. So all of these things that I suppose make cars more more sort of customized for the customer is also going to be in some ways useful for the government. So these are trends that will definitely have an impact.
Yeah, you snuck something in there, which I'm sure people will have picked up on, road usage tax, because they're not going to be getting the tax on the diesel and the petrol if everyone goes electric. So they're going to have to compensate for that revenue in some way. So the idea would be they keep an eye on you. Big Brother will watch you. And if you use 30K of motorway, you'll pay.
Yeah, and in some ways that might be a fairer system than what we currently have. But I mean, this is the thing, Pat, the more advanced cars get, the more it'll be used, you know, for all sorts of purposes. And I'm sure the government are looking at this, and other governments across Europe and across the world are looking at this in terms of how to track where people are going and what that information could be used for. And of course, road usage tax will be one of them.
Yeah. Anyway, all sorts of other things happening. There's a merger between the Fiat Chrysler and PSA, these Peugeot, Citroen and Opel car group. Is that merger going to go ahead?
Yeah, that looks like it'll go ahead. It's this is probably going to be something that's going to happen in the next while. I mean, for the next 10 years, definitely this decade is going to see, I'd see a lot of casualties in terms of car manufacturers. So mergers seem to be the one way that they can survive. So I think we're going to see a lot of more sort of, you know, major car, a handful of major car groups by the end of this decade, definitely. So this is probably the first of many.
All right. Well, very interesting trends that lie ahead. Worrying times for those in the motor industry. But will we all revert to type when the pandemic is over? Only time will tell. Geraldine Herbert, motoring journalist, thank you very much for joining us.